All right. Hey, Phil.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
So Phil Weiss is the founder and senior editor of Mondo Weiss. Phil, you've spent 15 years or more following and reporting on the politics of Jewish communities and institutions in the U.S. As it relates to Israel-Palestine. As we approach this election, thinking about the final few months of the Trump presidency, I'm curious what you think in terms of Jewish communities and Jewish institutions in the U.S. have changed in the last almost 4 years of the Trump administration, and the impact that that he and these people that have been, I would say, running our government, but that might be overstating it for them, have had when it comes to Jewish communities and institutions.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that he has he's fractured the official Jewish community on Israel. So that thing that the Israel lobby doesn't want to happen, sort of Jewish organizations, pro-Israel organizations split, he's done it. The good news for the Democratic Party, which wants to keep, and for the Israel lobby itself, is that his splinter seems to be it seems like he has split off the right wing of that Israel lobby. They're on his side. So like he has the Zionist Organization of America and parts of AIPAC, and certainly Sheldon Adelson and the Republican Jewish Coalition, the official Jewish body of the Republican Party, they're all on his side. But I think the great body of the American Jewish organizations are siding with the Democrats right now. And obviously the big ones like AIPAC and American Jewish Committee, they can't publicly support Biden. But you see the sort of liberal, quote unquote, liberal Zionist J Street faction, ADL type, sort of center left. I think they're all for Biden, and they're smelling a Biden victory, and they are also sensing that when Trump is out, who's so divisive, they will be able to reunify, have a consensus pro-Israel position. Right now, the government, United States government, is obviously very pro-Israel, but I would not say it's a consensus position inside the Israel lobby. It's not a consensus position. The consensus position in the inside the Israel lobby is we got to hold on to the two-state solution, and which I believe is a fiction, the two-state solution, but just the same, that's their position. We got to hold on to the two-state solution, so there'll be a Jewish democratic state and a Palestinian state, and you won't have too many Palestinians in that Jewish state, so it'll be Jewish majority. We've got to maintain that, and that belief is being maintained inside the Jewish, the Democratic Party, and certainly the large center and center liberal Jewish organizations. And Trump has sort of taken a wrecking ball to that by promoting annexation and one state.
So the
I hope that answers your question. I'm sorry if I rambled.
No, that's fine. So the thing that you're saying Trump has done that they didn't want to have happen, I'm guessing you mean like the overt politicization of the issue.
Yeah.
What do you think the game plan, assuming Biden wins,
is
the game plan to try and roll that back? I mean, can it be rolled back? Do you think the institutions are going to try and roll it back?
The politicization part?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They are going to instantly roll that back. That they are going to try to roll that
back. They're going to try. Are they going to be, is it possible? Are they going to be able to? And how would they even go about it?
Well, let's answer how they go about it first. I mean, let's say Biden wins. From a pro-Israel standpoint, he has a huge tent. And that tent is a little too big right now. Politically, it's a very hard tent to manage just on this issue. I'm sure he's got a big tent on a lot of issues. If he gets in, he's going to have a big tent on a lot of issues. And I think it's going to be hard for him to maintain that coalition on other issues. But on the Israel thing, I mean, he's got neoconservatives for him who want him to bomb the heck out of Syria. And he's got on the left side, he's got Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib who are endorsing him, and AOC. I mean, and these and the squad and our friends. And we represent a real constituency in the Democratic Party, and or on the left of, I shouldn't say Democrat, but yeah, that's inside the Democratic Party. Our folks are, the left is, that's their only address, kind of, after Bernie Sanders got left. And so, as Michael has pointed out often, Michael Aria, the majority of Democrats are for conditioning aid to Israel over its illegal expansion, the settlement program, and the Democratic Party doesn't reflect that. And Biden has supporters who are very important to him, from Chaim Saban to the big donor to Eric Edelman and Elliot Cohen, Republican neoconservatives who just endorsed him, mm-hmm. who are an important kind of middle or Washington faction. He's got all these people on the right who love him and expect him to, you know, reunify the government around a consensus position on Israel that will be non-divisive. And I think he's going to try. I think he may even succeed somewhat. But there's going to be a lot of tension, because forget about the right wing, which is, and I would include evangelical Christians in the right wing. Let's be clear. Mm-hmm. It's not just Jewish organizations. I should have made that clear. I mean, Trump's base includes a lot of evangelicals who love his hardline policies in Israel. But so forget about the right. They can stay in the Republican Party. I think it represents certainly maybe 25% of the Israel lobby inside the Jewish community. And so Biden's got this huge block of pro-Israel people, and then also Israel critics, from Betty McCollum to in Minnesota to Linda Sarsour. You know, I just, so how do you keep them together? I don't know how they're going to do it, Dave. I don't know how I think they'll set about doing it. I'm answering your question backwards. They'll set about trying to do it by saying, we are against Israeli settlements and expansion, against settlement expansion, as they said in the platform. They couldn't even come out against settlements in the platform. Yeah. We're against settlement expansion, and we are going to for the two-state solution. And I think the great thing about this issue, or not great, it's a horrible thing, but it's a true fact, is that it just never will go away. And sadly, it never goes away. And Netanyahu is going to test him very quickly on his opposition to settlement expansion.
So that, when I spoke with Michael about this, my question was, does Biden really have the strength? I mean, Biden is not suffering from dementia the way some people were trying, you know, some people on the left and the right, whatever reason on the left, we're trying to paint him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just not, but there's also,
he's slow. He is a little slow, right? I mean,
okay. But you know,
I agree with you.
There's nothing wrong, but he's not the Joe Biden of 2008.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's obvious.
Yeah.
And you know, at one point he even said, I think during the primary, that he was seeing himself as a transitional leadership figure inside the Democratic Party. I think he identified Pete Buttigieg as the direction of that transition. I think so, which is, you know.
Was that after, did he say that after he picked Kamala Harris as his?
No, this was going back. I remember hearing about this. Like, it was part of his pitch.
It was desperation.
Primary voters. It was like, you know, but.
Brilliant. Okay.
I don't think it was a strong part of his pitch. But, I guess what I'm thinking is, does I think Joe Biden has the strength to sort of the strength of will and the political capital, should he win, to do some things. But there, I wonder if he has the strength and political capital to push in the direction that the lobby is going to want, against the forces that are just sort of naturally occurring because of demographic change, the changes that you just talked about. And Kamala Harris has not really clearly staked out her position, I don't feel, on Israel-Palestine in her political career yet. She's not a Cory. It doesn't feel like she's at the point that Cory Booker is. You know, she's not reading the Talmud. And so, you know, she's looking to the future. I mean,
Dave, she wants
a promotion,
okay,
not a demotion, right? Yes. So I'm just wondering the people around Biden. I mean, he's surrounding himself by people who I think are going to be able to hold that line better than he will. I think he's doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
I just wonder, is he going to be able to hold that line for the Israel lobby against the changing demographics and the rising tide among the base?
Sadly, I think the answer is yes. Okay. And first of all, I just want to question a couple of your points, which I find intriguing. I agree with you about Biden's competence, and I think we have to I have to say I think he has run a brilliant campaign. I mean, obviously, in 3 days I could be completely wrong, you know, but what this guy's a machine politician for 60 years, 70 years, he's been a machine, whatever, his whole life, he's been a machine Democratic politician. And I think the machine worked this time anyway. But I think he's also been message disciplined and kept his Rose Garden strategy, whatever he'd done, it's worked. That being said, I think Kamala is a tool. Kamala Harris right now, I regard her as a tool of AIPAC. Now, I accept your point because she's embraced AIPAC. She's embraced Netanyahu. I take your point that she is a very shrewd politician and a work in progress. And her whole thing has got to be about the future, you know, and she's too canny to have put all her cards in. You know, you probably are right about that she's in flux. If you're Joe Biden, I think you want this issue just to go away right now. Let's say he's president. He doesn't need this. This is the last thing. Obviously, I mean, this is the thing that people in the Israel lobby itself say. You know, he's going to be dealing with a pandemic, with a major recession, presumably. A lot of the chickens are going to come home to roost on the economy, I feel, because Trump's cooking it. Whatever they're doing, you know, I don't know. I just feel like he's going to be dealing with these major, he's a wartime president, in my view. You know, we're in a war against COVID. And that's what he's going to be focused on, and the economy.
But he's also going to inherit a very different playing field than the last time he was on it.
Right.
I mean, you know, In watching the event with Trump talking to the president of Sudan and Netanyahu on the phone and the normalization, he dropped multiple times. I mean, he basically said that Saudi Arabia in the next few weeks is gonna sign some kind of, or whatever they're doing. I don't know. You know, he makes it sound like everybody's gonna come into the deal, like there's just one thing, when it's actually just, you know, bilateral agreements between these different countries.
Yeah.
And he's hinting that there are going to be more.
Yes. Saudi Arabia's around the corner, they say. Yeah.
So yeah. I take your point that, like, there are these crises domestically that are going to just require a lot more of his attention. And I think you're right that he would rather spend time thinking about domestic stuff. At the same time, the Trump administration has raised this stuff up to such a high level that I mean, I don't think he's going to be able to ignore it, because Netanyahu's going to be there, and Netanyahu is going to test him from the very beginning, I think.
Okay, let's just focus on normalization for a second.
Yeah,
that whole process of Arab nations doing whatever their power politics with Israel, that is going to continue, and Biden's people are already taking credit for that, in that they say this process was in place for years. We were working on this too. Okay. Trump was a benefit. Okay. So Biden's people are just going to ride that wave.
That's a solid pivot. I mean, that's good gameplay.
Okay.
It was my fault. I did it.
And it's selling out to Palestinians. They're going to get, and then the other thing is, I sort of wonder, sorry, I lost the screen for a sec. I sort of wonder if, Netanyahu tests him with more settlements, and, I sort of feel like Biden is privately saying, I don't want to spend any political capital fighting Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm going to spend zero political capital fighting Netanyahu. Now, we can get to the Iran deal in a second, but which is critical. But he saw what happened to Barack Obama, who, whatever principle he had about this, he did say the settlements must end, and he tried to spend some political capital on that, and he got his head handed to him. And it just was, it wasn't worth it. And to, I mean, that's what Biden is concluding right now. Biden is really an old sellout on this issue. There's a lot of evidence that Biden hated the settlement project and fought both Golda Meir and Menachem Begin over it back in the 70s, right. 80s, went to said this is wrong in his 30s, and just realized there's no political cap, there's no road. And I just feel like I'm not going to spend an ounce of political capital. And something that Aaron David Miller, a Israel lobbyist, said online the other day on a tweet was, this guy has Clinton's DNA, not Obama's DNA politically. And Clinton was just, you know, did whatever Israel wanted, you know, I think. He didn't present any real impediment to what Israel wanted. And Obama made a minor impediment. So I think that Biden is going to pursue the Clinton strategy, middle path, you know, not as bad as Trump. I'm not going to be Obama and take you on, you know, and I just, that's what I think we're in for. And because partly because he's going to say, I don't have the capital. I don't have the time to do this. I'm, you know. Yeah. So he's
got AIPAC on his right, and he's got J Street on his left, and everybody else is off the map for him.
Yeah, but that's huge. That's huge. I mean, inside the Democratic Party, J Street will represent, as of Tuesday, they'll represent a lot of Democrats. I don't know. And then that question becomes, you know, where's the force to, who's going to force our issue on Biden's attention? Who is going to demand that? Will, you know, J Street might make some lip service to it, but I mean, a lot of the Jewish organizations have come together against Trump because of, you know, he's a white supremacist racist, and there's an anti-Semitic streak, and obviously, and there's going to be a real, if Biden wins, there's going to be jubilation inside a lot of American Jewish circles, as there will be in a lot of circles in America, that hopefully Trumpism has been dealt a major setback. I mean, obviously it's not going to be gone from our country, but I don't know. So,
yeah.
And so there'll be a unity. I think that you're going to get a unity thing. I don't know. I mean, I mean, this is an issue that you and I care a lot about, the liberation of Palestine. And, you know, I guess I just always think BDS is the obvious answer here. It's always been the obvious answer to this question, or has been since it became really powerful international campaign.
Sure. So that's what happens if Biden wins, and maybe we'll know that in 5 or 6 weeks. what if Trump wins? I've talked to Michael about what he thinks that means around U.S. politics. What does that mean for Jewish communities if Trump wins? And I don't know whether he actually wins or whether they steal the election or something. Who knows? But what does this, what does a potential Trump second term mean for Jewish communities and Jewish institutions in the U.S., both as just as, you know, Jews and Jewish organizations existing in the United States, but also how they relate to Israel and Palestine?
Well, on the first question, I mean, my focus is not so entirely parochial that I can even, it is fairly parochial, obviously, but it's not so parochial that I can even speak for that community well. I think that the simple answer is that 75% of Jews will vote for Biden, maybe 78%. it's going to be high, and they represent, that's representative of the Jewish community. It's a democratic community. And I think they'll be shot. And it's also a very, you know, as American communities go, it's fairly privileged. It's one of the, you know, it's largely on the coasts, and it's, you know, among the, you know, more privileged groups by ethnicity. And I just think there'll be shock and horror, you know, and, and just spiritually, it's going to be a very hard time for a lot of people if that happens. I think it'll be shock and horror. And I think those institutions will do what Muslim communities are going to be doing if it happens, and trying to come up with a strategy for the next 4 years, re-envisioning a strategy for the next 4 years of resistance and survival. And
but there will be, there will be elation in the Adelson and Milstein houses.
You're right. You're right. That's true.
I mean, yeah.
It's true. I'm sorry.
It's not monolithic. I mean, they're, you know,
you're right. You're right. There will be elation. Yeah. In some communities. But I think that goes to the Israel question, the second part. And the best prediction I saw was from this guy, Michael Koplow, center Zionist at Israel Policy Forum, who said, and it was a little bit of a get out the vote message, but it was also, I think, true. He says, look, annexation is going full steam if there's a second Trump administration. That's it's a done deal. It's just, there will be. So I think that actually, that part could be good for the Palestinian solidarity community, in that it will remove the veil of the two-state solution from what is a one-state reality. And it's plainly apartheid. It's more plainly apartheid that way. And it's a struggle for equal rights in an apartheid state. So that's really hurtful to the Israel lobby when they lose their fig leaf of the two-state solution. So I don't know. I find it such a negative. I find all of it so upsetting, but I do recognize that there is a political upside to the Palestinian solidarity movement in the end of the fiction. And going back to the Biden thing, the one state struggle for equal rights against an apartheid state, that's moving well ahead in progressive circles and gaining traction. Mm. And I do think that there are going to be a lot of organizing opportunities for the left over the next few years but there's a Biden administration over that question. I mean, they're just going to keep forcing that issue. Michael shared with me this report about, I'm forgetting, I think it's Kampa Najjar, candidate for the House.
All right.
Young Palestinian American is a candidate for the House in California. And there's a report out on right-wing media that he has said Ilan and Rashida hang on to this opposition to two states. Two states is BS. And he's right. It is BS if that's an accurate report. And I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of organizing on the left around that. I mean, just let's end this bullshit, you know? I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Dave? I'm curious. You had some, I like a lot of your prognostications, you know, so not the 5-week one.
I don't have any great insight. I mean, I think you're right. I think that, I think that in some ways the right broadly and the right inside, Jewish communities and Jewish organizations is maybe overextending themselves on the Trump, branch. You know, it may be one of those be careful what you wish for situations. I don't know. I mean, I think all of the stuff that they're doing is going to continue to be accelerated. I mean, Kushner, I think, will consolidate his power around foreign policy. I mean, The amount of consolidation of power inside our government that could happen under a Trump second administration is scary. So, I mean, you think about Pompeo, Kushner, Stephen Miller. I mean, if they've had any leashes on them up until now, those will be gone.
That's funny. I mean, it's horrible funny. It's the antithesis of bureaucracy.
There's that report that came out about what Stephen Miller is planning already for a second term, and it's, you know, I mean, it's incredible. It's, wow. I mean, it's more of the same, but it's just ramped up, you know, more than it is. You and I over the past couple of days have been laughing about that event with the president of Sudan and Netanyahu, and, you know, kind of laughing at the people in the background. But the amount of power that they have now is considerable, and the amount of power that they would have in a second term.
That's a great observation. It's kind of the antithesis of bureaucracy, you know? I mean, it is.
And there's that the change in designation. This slipped by. Yeah. I don't know that we talked about it inside MondoWise, but last week there was a story about the Trump administration changing a designation of a whole class of federal employees so that it would make it easier to fire them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
These are career employees, and it would affect virtually every department and agency to some extent throughout the entire government. And it would allow them, it basically created a new class of federal employee that they would be classified as, and it would allow them to be more easily fired. These are career people. So then you would either get rid of the positions altogether, or you would fill them with, politically motivated appointees, you know.
Yeah.
So it would just allow a gigantic shift of the bureaucracy. And I remember years ago when I was a freshman in college taking my first political science class, and this guy, I forget who the teacher was, but he had, I forget what country he was from. He'd grown up under a repressive regime. And I remember him saying, look, you know, people make fun about the bureaucracy, that it slows everything down, but the bureaucracy can oftentimes help prevent repressive regimes from coming into power, because the bureaucracy holds a large amount of power and they have the ability to slow things down. And I remember him saying, like, it's really troubling when the repressive regime comes in and replaces the bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Gets rid of the bureaucrats, because then there's nothing. I mean, you know, and how many books have I read about presidential about presidents and their decision making trees and how information gets up to them? The bureaucracy can influence the president based on how fast information they're going to send up the chain. But if you've replaced the bureaucracy
with Stephen Miller and Jared Kushner, that's great. I mean, that's horrible. Great. Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah.
As we kind of wrap up here, you were infamously, well, a lot of people may not know this, you wrote about it recently, but you were fired by Jared Kushner.
Yeah.
Which an event that helped launch Mondo Ice in a way.
Yeah.
You absolutely think Biden is going to win. You think it's going to be decisive.
Yeah.
What kind of celebration? I mean, what kind of just like warm feelings is that inspiring? The notion that in a few short months you might be able to watch Jared Kushner walk unceremoniously out of the White House.
You know, it's a great question, because, you know,
and what do you think his next? I mean, you know, Trump is close to being dead, if he's not already.
Yeah.
And just being propped up by some kind of automation system. But Jared has a whole life in front of him.
But Dave, did you hear his statement about Black Americans the other day?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I found it like, I didn't know the guy that well. Okay, let's be honest. I didn't know the guy well. He's always been something.
It's not your fault.
What's that? Yeah.
So it's not your fault.
Yeah. No, he's a good one. He's always been something of a cipher, I think, to me. Yeah. And he's got that weird voice. And I don't know. I just felt like I watched that statement and I just thought, wow, Jared, you've been in the most empowered positions in the country. And, you know, so much available to you in terms of knowledge and cultural sophistication. And how could you make such an idiotic statement with so little sensitivity? And so I just feel like, I guess, so to go back, you know, I like that you honored my my prognosis. Well, you accurately stated what I think is going to happen on Tuesday. And part of that scenario is that anyone with a taint of Trump about him is just going to be, even the Republican Party is going to just say, we don't want anything to do with you, because they're going to be so smashed. So, you know, and on the personal front, in terms of vindication of, over Jared, you know, I don't, I really feel like I feel such pride in what you, Adam, me, Allison, Yumna, Michael, you know, Kate, you know, what we're creating, what that we've made something of an institution in this period of the Israel-Palestine conflict that has had a real place. And so I feel like I've done well by being fired. So I don't have much personal grievance against him. That's actually
very good of you. Very good of you. Always taking the high road.
No, not all. I mean, you know, I'm 65, Dave. I'm 65. So, you know, some of the, those embers of those, that kind of rash rage of youth is over with me. And it's like, what, I mean, I don't know. He's such a fool too. You know, I mean,
it's painful to watch.
It's painful to watch.
Yeah. I don't think we're done with Trumpism. I think that there are other Trumps on the rise. I think the key to fixing this, the problem of the right-wing ascendancy in this country, has got to be in dealing with the fact that our electoral system is just completely screwed up. I mean, there are more people agree with Democrats and liberal positions and even radical leftist positions than right-wing positions. That's right. It's just the truth. Yeah. And the electoral system is now, it's a system to maintain minority rule in the country. And if we don't fix that, then even if Biden wins, we're really this whole thing is kind of run its course, and we're in for a really, really unfortunate future. I really hope that, you know, that's kind of what we turn our attention to, because otherwise, you know, the next one up is Tom Cotton or Josh Hawley.
Oh, that guy's scary.
Or what's her name? You know, the former UN ambassador in South Carolina, governor
Nikki Haley.
And of course, Mike Pompeo. If we want what Gavin Newsom said is going to happen, where the Republican Party nationally, where it mirrors what's happening in California, where they are now a third party, you know, if we want that kind of political space, we're going to have to fix the electoral system.
I didn't know that was the case. That's interesting.
And I mean, his point was like the Republican Party doesn't really have much of a governing strategy anymore, but nationally, the system is kind of rigged in favor of the right. So, you know, if we don't do something about that, we're going to have President Nikki Haley and President Tom Cotton, and they're all going to have a minority of the vote, but they're going to be able to get into office because of the minority rule system that we've got in place. So, I don't know. I'm not quite as optimistic as you are, but
well, I mean, but Dave, let's also be straight. I mean, I feel like ultimately your political investment is not in that system anyway, but is in grassroots movements. Is that a correct assessment?
Me? Yeah. Yes. I study political science. I know about campaigns and
oh, okay. Right.
Worked on some and stuff. And I also think that we should smash the state and abolish nationalism. So,
right, but I mean, you have a power. I mean, the forces for change in this country, there are a lot of grassroots forces for change in which you have a deep interest, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's not like you're running down to the DNC to help them reform that electoral system, are you? You would, I guess.
No, but, you know, I'm also sending $5 to AOC and the Justice Democrats. I mean, it's like we're stuck inside the system as it kills us.
Yes. Okay.
So what do we do? I don't know.
Well, I sure appreciate this discussion.
I don't want to end this on such a on such a dour note.
Why not?
Why not? Oh. Phil thinks it's going to be a blowout. I think it might be a blowout and Trump might win. Those things can both happen because of the minority rule system that we have. Either way, one way is really bad for Palestine and for Jewish Americans in general. The other way is less bad, but not good.
Dave, can you just define blowout? Landslide, I think, is 7 points.
Some of these people are saying that Joe Biden's going to have 400 electoral, that he's going to break 400. That's insane.
That's
insanity. I don't think those people have been to a polling place in many states.
Is that that's the Texas scenario, right?
Both of them seem to have given up on Texas. I mean, given up. I don't know. Both of them, Biden seems to have kind of given up on it, and Trump seems to be taking it for granted.
Both of them
are going hard on Florida, and Biden believes if he wins Florida, that'll be kind of game over, that there's just no way that Trump can get 270, which mathematically is probably correct. The amount of voter suppression that's going on in Wisconsin is not getting the amount of coverage that it deserves. Wisconsin is a mess. But then you've got all these other states. There is voter suppression going on in every state in the country by the right. Mm-hmm. And there's not an effective infrastructure, you know, from like advocacy groups to political parties to certainly the state to address it.
In any state that matters, they don't care about suppressing vote in New York, right?
Well, they should. I mean, AOC stood up there in the Bronx and said that the long lines that are going on in New York amount to a voter suppression. Mm-hmm. And Bill de Blasio had the nerve to push back on her and say, oh, that's not helpful. We're trying to get it done. Give me a break. I mean, it is effectively voter suppression if the system that you have in place suppresses the vote. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's not like you didn't see it coming. So it's like, you know, there were ways to mitigate this from the very beginning. So on the left, on the Democratic left, you've got incompetence. And on the right, you have malicious intent. And that's what, so it's like, can Biden overcome that to hit 270? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe. You know.
What is the maximum he could win in the electoral, in the pure, you know, vote percentage wise and lose in the Electoral College? I'm just curious. What do you think the math is? Hillary was up 2 points, right? Or 2.5?
Some of that math gets real weird. I mean, you know, 538 looks at that and they try and say, like, you got to have 8%. I think they said 8% nationally would translate. But that's such a weird thing because we don't vote nationally.
Yeah,
but we don't vote nationally. So it does. I've never really understood the math around that thing because,
I think
it's really shaky.
If you're dealing with 8%, point, if he loses and wins by 8% the raw vote, you were dealing with such instability in your body politic, it's crazy. You know what I mean? That is just politically,
was the body politic unstable when in 1984?
I wasn't around then. I mean, I was young. I was 29 years old and I wasn't really registering. I mean, I think the body politic has been unstable for the last 3 years before, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, so I don't know what unstable or stable means in that context. I mean, you know, landslides happen. I mean,
yeah.
But again, in our system, it's like, it, because the Electoral College is the thing that matters, you get that number, it looks like a landslide, but compared to the popular vote, maybe not. Again, you know, Hillary Clinton won.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about a national election, you look at, well, who did people select to run the government?
Yeah.
They selected Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Clearly. Yeah. It wasn't like a matter of a few votes.
No, of course.
It was clear. So, you know, but Donald Trump wins the Electoral College, which as a system was designed originally to give more power to lower population states.
Right.
And they've gamed that system. The right has gamed that system to turn lower population states red.
Yeah.
And they can win. And what it amounts to is minority rule.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with you.
So I don't know. I kind of don't pay attention to those national polls. I mean, I think it's more interesting to look at those state polls and then you can figure out, well, what are the, you know, there are states that are reliably Democratic, yeah. They're going to vote Democratic. So you can start to add those things up with some of those. There are a bunch of those like simulators.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a good, that snake at 538 is interesting.
So. If Joe Biden, if he flips and wins the electors from Florida.
Yeah.
Then I think, yeah, he'll win.
Huh.
But he can also lose Florida and he still has a couple of paths.
Yeah. I see well. That.
But
well, the good thing is that a lot of the speculation will be over in a few days.
No. I mean, there's that thing, too. No, it's not going to be over because.
I think it will be.
No.
That's part of my optimism.
No. This is going to be immediately. It's going to immediately go into the courts. I mean, you've got states that aren't even going to. They're not even going to start. Some of the states don't even start counting absentee ballots until after the election.
Okay. So, Dave, you think I'm naive.
I don't think you're naive.
No, that's fine. It character, whatever. The good thing about this disagreement is you will be right within a few days or you won't be, right? We'll know whether
both
you're
of us. That's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad this long national nightmare of tension is coming to it. Well, I guess it could be sustained, as you say, for a while, but
that
okay.
is a good question. That is a good question. I didn't ask Michael that, but that is a good question. Cause I think on Tuesday night, Biden is going to be clearly in the lead. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to win.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, you know, if Trump comes out, I mean, if it ends up with Trump in the lead and he comes out and declares victory, which he may very well do.
Yeah, yeah.
But then that doesn't happen. Democrats tend to vote early. So a lot of these absentee ballots are Democratic.
And North Carolina,
it's going to be a mess. The thing is, it's going to be an absolute mess. It's going to go into the courts. Nobody really understands how that's going to work.
Yeah, I think we're going to have an answer that night. And North Carolina comes in at 7:30, right? I think your state comes in at 7:30.
Yeah, but see here, the Republicans lost. The Supreme Court sided with. They went against the GOP in North Carolina twice, where the GOP was trying to limit the ability to count absentee ballots after election day.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
the election board extended it 9 days. So as long as your ballot gets in by election day, they're going to count them up until 9 days. But like if it comes in the mail, if it arrives at the election board 8 days after the election, they're going to count it.
Wow.
They had extended that from 3 days. The Republicans tried to push it back. The Supreme Court now said, no, they can do that. But in some other places, the courts have said, no, you got to count it faster. You can't extend it. It's a mess.
Right.
It's a mess.
Well, it's a mess if those votes represent a large enough block, if the uncounted votes, you know, represent a large enough vote block that the race is in contention.
Democrats vote early.
Yeah.
And they vote by mail in larger numbers than Republicans normally. So if a bunch of those ballots come in around the country and then they can't count them, so who knows? We're going to be talking about this election for the next week and a half. I guarantee it. I'm looking forward to our Slack channels and some of the GIFs and videos that we're going to be sharing.
Okay. Well, Dave, thanks a million.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Bill.
Talk to you soon. Yeah. Hey, have a good weekend.
Bye.